Colonel Churchill, Reel 6.
Now, in this sloping bit which we had to climb up to get out, we'd put the earth of that into the two open bays we'd left at the end of the tunnel. So that was full. Now, also, when Dowse came back, he said, "This inclined slope for us to climb up seems to me much longer than we thought it was going to be. I don't know if the angle is not quite right or what is wrong, but it does seem a great deal longer, and I've totally filled up the hollows on each side." Now, when we decided to come back 6 feet and try again, because it allowed the right amount, because there was about a 5-foot strip of earth between the roadway and the wall, we had to get rid of that earth somewhere, and that was a difficult business. But finally, Dowse came back and said, "I'm through. I've got the knife out, and I've made a small hole, and there's glorious night air at the end of this ghastly tunnel, which was full of stale air from his working and all the rest of it. It's lovely to smell the fresh evening air at this hole. I've enlarged the hole to about a foot. We make it a little bit bigger." So then we knew we were okay, and we were in the strip this time. We hadn't hit the wall. We were away from the roadway, and we were able to go out. So we then finished ourselves off, but it made us very, very late. And instead of getting out at about 11 o'clock, something like that night, it was not far off dawn when we finally got out. Well, we had on our heads, of course, things called mammy ties to keep the sand out of our hair and so on. And when we were working in the tunnel, we also wore these mammy ties because of the dirt. Well, the order in which we went out was Dowse first of all, James second, myself third, Dave fourth, and Dodger fifth. Now, Dodger was also the biggest of us. He was fairly bulky and about 6'4" in height. Well, now, when we got out, Dowse immediately went away from the tunnel mouth to try and discover where we could get away through these workings of the new buildings. And to my annoyance, James went away too. By that time, they had kicked down a lot of earth in this second thing, and I had the greatest difficulty in getting out at all. And I called out, not very loudly, "Jimmy, Jimmy." But Jimmy had gone. Jimmy and Dowse, well, they were away. And I could not. In the meantime, Dave was banging in my feet, saying, "Get on, what the hell's the hold-up?" And I said, "I can't bloody well get on. This thing is very small to begin with, and these two buggers in front have kicked down a lot of extra earth, and I can't get out." I don't know if that was too quiet. Anyway, I hope it is recorded. Finally, with a great deal of difficulty, I said to Dave, "Try and push my feet up if you can to help me to get out. There's nobody to help me." He said, "Get Jimmy to pull out." I said, "Jimmy isn't here." Finally, I got out with a great deal of difficulty and further delay. But I then remained in order to haul Day out, which I got out. And then Day and I, between us, had the greatest possible difficulty in hauling the Dodger out, as he was the biggest of us anyway. But ultimately, we were all out. By that time, either Dowse or James had come back to join us to find out why the hell we hadn't come out. And I said, "Because you two beetled off and didn't help us to get out." However, we were all out then. Well, we had also brought a bit of a cover, which we were going to put over the hole. But we thought it would probably be discovered fairly well when they knew we went there in the morning. Anyway, we then went to the final wall, which they'd started to build in this new camp, and we went over there without any difficulty. There were ladders and every sort of thing there. And when we were completely free, we all shook hands, and very sadly, there were five of us, you see. We were arranged in two pairs, Day and Dowse, although 20 years apart, had decided to travel by train. They were both long-term prisoners, could both talk German. Day wasn't very fit, he had a bad knee. Douse didn't want to go on what was known as a hard-ass escape, that is, walking across country. He wanted to go by train, and as they could both talk German, they thought there was a chance of that. We had also altered our grey Air Force uniform. It was grey Air Force rank-and-file uniform, which we were mainly dressed in. I think Jimmy James and Douse had their officers' grey Air Force uniform still, but they took the buttons off that, the brass buttons, and put on civilian buttons, and they opened up the front like a civilian coat. And we altered the rank-and-file Air Force uniform, which I was wearing, by opening it up to look like a grey civilian garment. Now, grey is the best colour to have in Germany. Everything is grey. They'll have a lot of grey uniform and a lot of grey clothes. And we were very lucky in having this Air Force uniform, which is a great help. Well, we all shook hands, and I'm sorry to say we abandoned the Dodger. The Dodger, again, he had earlier on tried to join himself onto Douse and Day, because he could talk German too as being a long-term prisoner, and he tried to join onto us. But we said, Dodger, you're not fit enough. Jimmy and I are fit and strong, and we were going far too fast as we were doing a hard-ass escape. You couldn't possibly keep up with this. We'd have to abandon you. You couldn't keep up with us, and you'd be then on your own. The other two said, no, Dodger, you're very forgetful, and you'd probably start talking English in the middle of a German carriage. Very crowded carriage. All the German railways are absolutely crowded. All the compartments are absolutely full of people. And people were bumping into each other, nudging each other, and having to talk and say sorry and all the rest of it. And they said, no, Dodger, you'd be a menace with us. So the Dodger was left on his own. Well, even at the very end, he thought he might attach himself to us. But we were all very tough and said, I'm sorry, Dodger, this is all arranged beforehand. You'll have to escape on your own. Goodbye, Dodger. See you in the Barclay in 2 months' time. Goodbye, Dodger. Goodbye, Dodger. Goodbye, Dodger. And we vanished off into the night in two pairs. And the wretched Dodger, having virtually made no plans whatever, found himself outside Sachsenhausen camp, a blaze of light just behind us, and 400 miles of to freedom. The Dodger story I could tell you about.
Well, no, but that,
I won't.
We'll stick to your own personal.
Yes,
life.
And what happened to the other two as well, I could tell you about. But Jimmy and I had a fairly successful escape. We were out for a fortnight, and we got almost to Rostock on the sea. In fact, and we used to walk along the railway line. We didn't walk along roads because we thought that was too dangerous, because there was traffic on the roads, particularly at night, where they were safe from aeroplane attacks. So we went cross-country. But to find your way cross-country is more difficult. We hadn't got maps. Now, the only map I had two maps. One, I had stolen a page out of Besenov's atlas, which showed Germany. It was fairly small scale, of course. It was an ordinary atlas, typical atlas page, showing Germany. And the day before we went out, finally, I'd made some excuse to borrow this atlas. I'd ripped out this page of Germany and folded it up, and it was in my pocket. We'd also got out of the Völkischer Beobachter a cutting, which I'd saved earlier, which was to inform the Germans in connection with bombing. It showed Berlin in the centre of a circle and 50-kilometre rings all round it, showing how far aeroplanes had to travel over Germany from the coast inwards to bomb Berlin. And I'd also kept that, because we were able to get German newspapers. So I had these two pictures. Now, the atlas was good because it had all the names in it, but it was, of course, pretty small. But we had these two, which were a distinct help to us, mainly because we were going by railway line. Now, if I remember rightly, I think the German station names had not been removed, but we only intended to walk on the railway line. However, when we got to Neustrelitz, which was part of the way to Rostock, a couple of things happened, which is very upsetting. I had earlier sprained my ankle. The reason for this was we decided not to walk any further, but to try and go by a railway truck, a goods truck. And Neustrelitz was a bit of a marshalling yard. Well, now, at a marshalling yard, I think both in this country and in Germany, on each of the trucks which have coal in them, or anything else, bedsteads or logs, at the two diagonal corners, they have a manifest under a wire frame which comes down, which holds this manifest onto the side of the truck, and you can read it through there, which tells the people marshalling the things where that truck is going. So you could tell where each of these trucks were due to go. Well, in most cases, we didn't know the names of these towns, and our little map, in many cases, didn't give them. So we didn't know where these bloody towns were in Germany. However, some we knew where they were, and so on. So what we did was, we went to these trucks and took off these manifests, about five or six trucks, took them back in the wood, and looked at them to decide. Then we found one we knew. Now, that is more or less where direction we want to go. So we went back and we said, now this is off the third truck. Now we must remember that it's in the second row, the third truck, and we put it back there. Then, which shows how one's mind can only go slowly from step to step, we said, hell to this. Let us also choose the best truck. And there's no reason why we should not send the trucks where they're supposed to go. Let us as well muddle up all the manifests. So, we will choose the best truck for ourselves, we will choose the best manifest for ourselves, and we'll muddle all the others up. Then, all over Germany, the next convoy of 70 or 80 trucks, they'll all be going to the wrong places, and we'll have chosen the truck we like most of all to go to where we want. And that is what we did. But we had to keep a very close watch, because the locomotives came in, they were of course all steam, and they used to take these things away. But they did a good deal of shunting, first of all, by getting them in the right order and so on. Well, we thought our truck was being moved to go out, and so we dashed along to it, and we got fairly high up on it. When to our horror, it was not taken away, but they came backwards in it, and I was right on the end of the truck. Well, what they do is, there were some empty trucks beyond which they hadn't connected up, and so they were sort of thrown off, and they were freewheeling away, and people had put the points for them to go to the right places. Well, I was jerked completely off the top of this thing, which was about 8 feet high, and I crashed down in the dark onto the railway line and sprained my ankle. This was murder. Agony it was, and extremely unpleasant. The next thing that happened also was, in this thing, one of my water bottles had been broken, and the water was pouring out, and there was glass everywhere, and so on and so forth. Now, also, when we had moved, one of my packs, we had two packs, one in front and one behind, and we fixed them onto army braces. We had army braces, which we used over our shoulders, and we fixed these homemade packs onto these things, so that we each had a bag behind and a bag in front, held over our shoulders on these braces and so on. And in that, we put largely vegetables, because it was mainly vegetables which we lived on. Now, mine were between the rails somewhere, where they'd been jerked off, but we knew where that had been. So when we'd finally got on to a truck to move, I got off it when it came to a halt to go and retrieve my bags. Well, Jimmy saw me get off and didn't realize I was going off only to pick it up, which wasn't far away, and come back again. So he thought For some extraordinary reason, I got off and hadn't been able to tell him. So he leapt off too. And the next thing I found was when I was under the rails in the semi-darkness, knowing the area, looking for my bag, Jimmy suddenly appeared and said, "What's happened? What's the change in plan?" So I said, "Christ, have you got off the thing?" And he said, "Yes." So I said, "Oh, no, there's no change in plan. I'm just trying to find my bag. Oh, yes, here it is," something of that sort. At that moment, the ruddy truck started to move backwards over us. And we saw, to our horror, the engine firebox coming towards us. But we couldn't take a chance in jumping out between the rails while the train was moving. So we said, "God, we'll just lie down as low as we can, as close as we can to a rail, and hope that the firebox doesn't either hit us or burn us." But we think there's probably a fair clearance between the... because they're the rails which are so high, then the firebox is a bit higher, and we thought we'd be okay, and we were. And the train went over us, there's this huge heat as it came over us, and then it came to a halt behind us. But unfortunately, with the headlight of the train shining like a searchlight, forward. Is that stopped?
No, that's all right.
Forward. Well, we then had to get up in this damn searchlight, which we did, because we had to move back. So we did, and we walked alongside the train, and the fireman in the train said something that he saw us going by, but we ignored him and merely walked on, pretended we hadn't heard. Then the train started to move again, and this time we had lost our favourite truck with our favourite manifest. So we had to jump on the buffers as they were going by, only very slowly at that stage, and we then climbed up. But we found we'd climbed up on an open truck which had huge tree trunks, logs, about 10 of them, all piled up, and all wet. But with two big chains, one chain at this end, one chain at that end, so that you could hold on to this chain, because the things were too cold and wet, the logs, to hang on to them. So we climbed up the chain and lay on the top log, very cold indeed. But we were moving in the right direction, towards Rostock. Now, finally, we halted somewhere. And Jimmy said, "I've got diarrhea. You must get off this bloody thing." So I said, "Well, okay, yes, I don't mind getting off too, because my leg is hurting me rather." So we got off this thing. Jimmy, because he wanted to have a rear, and I was quite glad to get off it too. Now, we moved away from the track, and Jimmy said, "I'll try and find a place for us to hide." So I said, "Well, don't go far, because I can only crawl." Now, I took my army gaiters off and put them in my hands. So when I was crawling, I had these gaiters to help my hands from being scratched and damaged when I was crawling. And Jimmy walked on ahead, and I said, "Now, don't lose me. Keep in touch with me closely. And if you find a place, we'll go and hide there, because daylight will be coming soon. And we always had to hide in the daytime and move at night." So that was okay, and we got there, and we lay down. And as always, we just lay in daylight, hiding. Now, to our great distress, there was a little path close by to us, and suddenly, without any warning, there was a German private soldier walking along this path, straight towards us before we saw him. Well, there wasn't a chance to move in that sort, so we just merely did casually lie there and hope for the best. Well, the German soldier looked at us, but as there were two of us and only one of him, and he had no arms or anything, he merely looked and moved on, and we sort of rather vaguely waved like that, and he moved on. There were a great many slave labourers in Germany at that time from all sorts of occupied countries who had been brought in to help. The women and boys up the age of about 12 worked in the fields, and the men worked in heavy industry or in the mines and that sort of thing. And he probably thought we were foreign workers. We might be even trying, because many foreign workers tried to escape back to their country and so on. Anyway, he didn't want to get involved with us, as there were two of us, so he merely walked on. But I said to Jimmy, "Now look here, Jimmy, I think we ought to move from here. That bugger may be back with some other people, as he's seen us, and there's probably a reward system in Germany for recapturing people, so I think we better move." So we only moved about 70 or 80 yards, but he moved down into a ditch which had a lot of foliage and nettles and things in it. But it was all right there, and we were covered and hidden away. And by God, within half an hour, this German had come back with two others who had rifles. However, they couldn't find us, and the NCO then cursed the soldier for something or other, and they all moved off again. So we said, thank God, how lucky we moved. So that was the first adventure we survived. Well, in due course, we went back to the train, and we travelled on a bit. Better stop it for a moment. We had another dangerous moment, because when we were hiding in the daytime, we used to hide in woods or where there was cover. And sometimes that was very annoying. The best thing happened when the railway line was going through a wood, and we only needed to go about 100 yards away from it, into the wood, where we still had our railway line close by for a direction to walk that night, but we were also hidden in the wood. And there we used to make a little fire and heat up some of our things, our soup or something else, make a vegetable soup, because we used to steal vegetables from the allotments. There are always allotments close to railway lines, and we used to steal vegetables there of all sorts, onions and potatoes and all sorts of things. But they were, except the onions, not many of them could you eat raw. We used to also eat a lot of elderberries, because a lot of elderberry trees all in bloom at that time. We had a lot of elderberries. But we used to make vegetable soup every day and drink that. And drink the water it was cooked in as a kind of thin water, and eat the cooked vegetables. Now, but to start these fires was very difficult. It was then, I think, October by that time, and everything was soaking wet. So we had the idea of stealing some oil from the German lamps on level crossings and on signals. Now, on this particular occasion where we had our second serious adventure, we were near a German signal. And at the foot of the signal, there was a platform about 4 foot 6 high and a kind of bicycle pedal and chain and wire which went up to the oil lamp at the top of the signal, which illuminated the signal, and you could wind it down. And we had once or twice taken oil from level crossing lamps or from signals. But we had run out of oil by this stage and wanted some more. So we said, well, we better get some here and now. We may not come to another level crossing or signal, so we better have this oil now. And I was on the platform and had wound down this handle and was pouring the oil into a bottle. You can easily find empty bottles moving across country in different places here and there. And we had spare bottles of various kinds. And I had filled this bottle up with oil. The lamp was relit, and I was just about to wind it up again when, to my horror, I got a most awful bang with a kind of Boy Scout pole on my legs, just about the level of my knee or thigh. And this knocked me off this platform. And I crashed down to find, to my horror, two Germans there. And so there we were, the two Germans and myself. Well, one of the Germans and I closed and were wrestling on the ground together, while the other German stood by with his Boy Scout pole and was trying to hit me. But every now and then, by doing a last-minute wriggle, he hit the German instead in the semi-darkness. And the German yelled out and told him to be more careful, or where's that effect? Jimmy, in the meantime, had rushed off, because one of the plans, we were on an embankment at that time, and one of the plans we'd said at the very start was, if one of us ever gets into a jam and the other is free, He should clear off. It's better for one chap to be captured and one still to be free than, unless he's quite certain he can help. If there's only one man against one man, he might be able to help. But if it's more than that, he should clear off and try and finish escape on his own. That was the plan. So Jimmy had started to move down this embankment. However, I'd yielded Jimmy to help me. And Jimmy very splendidly came back again and caught hold of the German with a stick from behind. And I think hurled him onto the ground, if I remember rightly. Anyway, as a result, I got away from my man, and Jimmy and I charged down this embankment and got away. But unfortunately, my bags of food were left behind. I think I'd probably taken them off in order to put the oil into the knapsacks, which we had, I told you, on these braces. And we had brace buttons on our trousers. I had my brace buttons the whole way around, so that if any buttons came off, I had lots of other ones, which I could be buttoned onto. Anyway, I'd lost that. However, we had escaped again, and we'd survived another tragedy, another